care of it here.
It's the Olson and Johnson syrup.
I'm the wingman.
Like a blue?
Yeah, blue light.
Whoa.
Welcome, everybody, to the Joint Committee on Transportation Preservation and Modernization. For the record, it's April 5th, 2017. Tonight, we're going to talk about accountability. A report out from the group. Representative Olson and Senator Johnson, welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us how we're going to fix things.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Andy Olson, State Representative out of the Albany area. And
I'm Betsy Johnson. I am the state senator out of District 16, and tonight Representative Olson's wingman.
Wing lady.
Multimodal reference.
Person of wing.
Yes.
Person with wings.
Lady.
She flies with her own,
all right,
I believe.
I'm going to try to get this thing going.
Oh, is that your drink over there?
Yeah.
There we go.
There we go.
We're so good, don't worry.
And we'll do this.
Okay. Nice.
And as usual, Mr. Chair and committee members, I just got to share this too because of the need to. This is our first presentation to you in beginning discussion for accountability for ODOT and where we go as a state and with the legislature. And you should also know that not all of us agreed on everything that you're going to hear, but there was clearly a consensus, I think, on the majority of what we heard tonight, and
Does that truck imply this is a heavy load?
That right there isn't even close to 80,000 pounds. Okay, so these are the folks that were part of the team that you assigned.
Nice.
Madam Chair and Mr. Chair. And so you have Senator Betsy Johnson, Senator Girard, wherever he's at, there you are, sir. And Senator Kathleen Taylor, Representative John Lively, who was very lively during our whole entire conversation.
He always is.
And myself. And for some reason, you chose to pick me to be the chair of this whole thing.
Yes, we did.
Now, just really quick for everybody. Initially, when this all started for us from your assignment, was that you wanted us to be an audit team. It was real clear, probably not more than about a week into our movement toward this, that especially with the investigation that was occurring across the state with different articles from different newspaper outlets, that there was really probably no need for us to get into the weeds for investigation, since I'm also part, and you are as well, Mr. Chair, part of the Joint Committee on Marijuana, so you understand that. But with the four of you, and I appreciate your involvement with that, we decided to move forward with more of an accountability issue, and that at that time we would then come back with our group, our team, with recommendations to you for that on accountability. So this is what we did. Besides looking at several different documents, also we visited, we had four different meetings with different folks. Our first one was with contractors. Then we also met with former Oregon Transportation Commission chairs, and that was those four were Mike Holleran, Stuart Foster, Steve Corey, and Henry Hewitt. And that was really kind of a fun, lively conversation that we had with them. Then we met with Bob Russell and Craig Campbell, which was information that the committee had heard back in December from them, but we revisited that with them. And then we listened also to Katie Koba and George Naughton. Mr. Chair, this is for you.
What just happened?
No idea what that is, but all right.
Well, I mean, you might want to read that cartoon. Mike
Pass.
Okay, thanks.
Smiley stickers. Oh, okay, got it.
The one thing I want to kind of share before I get started a little bit, a lot of information here in the McKenzie report. There is a piece that I want to reference to immediately as we go forward into this, what our number one recommendation is. And I thought it was very helpful, and we'll put things in perspective as we get going with this. And I'm going to kind of share it to you in a nutshell version here. It deals with governance. But the idea behind it was that they were describing OTC and their role. Responsibilities and decision-making processes are ambiguous and inconsistent. And they go on further describing it, but their conclusion was this. In Colorado, for example, their statute requires the Colorado Transportation Commission to form a committee on efficiency and accountability and to reach beyond the commission for members. Additionally, to ensure that the commission remains highly functional and consistent even as membership changes, the commission may establish onboarding and succession planning methodologies. And that was from what, as you look at the Colorado model. So, as I mentioned that to you, this is our number one recommendation, to return appointing authority to the Oregon Transportation Commission, OTC, as it applies toward the selection of the director of Oregon Department of Transportation. Now, there's a number of reasons why that we decided to move forward with that. And again, I'm going to say not all of us agreed to this, but clearly this was the direction the majority of us felt was the first and the number one. Oregon has a rich history of citizen leadership for the first place. I mean, if you look at all of us, we're citizens. And we're here in leadership roles right now. Oregon does its best work when highly motivated citizens are in the leadership roles to make Oregon work. All four of the former chairs felt that this was the number one issue that they felt should return back to or what had been prior to 1999. I think you can read between the lines in the letter that the current chair, Tammy Bainey, wrote to the governor that OTC should act as the board of directors. And that's what we're trying to do here as we move forward, and you'll see that a lot more as we move forward with this. The next part, the director powers and duties. I'm going to jump here a little bit, but I'm going to come back. I do want to inject one thing here with you. As you read leadership books, and one of my favorite ones is the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership by John Maxwell that he wrote probably about 14, 15 years ago. And law number 4 deals with the law of navigation. And this is how simple it is. The premise behind that, the law of navigation, is that anyone can steer the ship, but it takes a leader to chart the course. And that's the direction that we're wanting to go as we move forward with our team here in the movement and support of OTC to strengthen ODOT as well, and then also connect us through the state of Oregon. The director's powers and duties, all four of those components right there deal specifically and come right out of what the Colorado model is and for their statute. It creates better alignment between the director and OTC, and you can find that in their recommendations here, or at least some discussion that they had. And the other thing too, as I go back again, I'm going to bounce around a little bit because there's some pieces and some thoughts that I have here, and Senator Johnson, you can jump in anytime you want to, but as I mentioned earlier, that we have such a rich history of legislative leadership in our state for different projects. I mean, one doesn't have to go too far to just cross over the Columbia River off of I-205 and get that Glenn L. Jackson Memorial Bridge and his, you know, 20 years leadership, to also consider Gail Ackerman as well, as she was the chair. But they step up to the plate and get us where we need to be. And that's some of the reasoning why we're wanting to get there at that time. Did you Want to jump in? No. Or you're good.
Well, that's well good. Choreographed.
So the next thing that we have that we want to talk a little bit about is governance. And because I think this becomes kind of a pretty important piece to this. You know, obviously, as we move forward with what our recommendations are from number one, the governor continues to appoint the commission. The legislature, well, this is something that we've had some discussion with amongst us. And I'm interested in floating this out to you because I really think that this is a decision that we have to make as we move forward in crafting anything. But I do like what Washington has done with their model. And the idea behind that is that they have created a joint committee through the legislature that has the authority to have policy and budget authority. And they work closely with their transportation commission up there, who then in turn works closely with WSDOT up there. And I'm thinking to myself, this could be extremely fluid to make this happen. And, you know, again, I throw that out there at you because I feel that that would be a great piece to move forward with in discussion for governance. Again, I say not all of us agreed to that, but the majority did. OTC, the next page will identify more in detail their governance roles and what we're going to be doing with that. Counties and cities, we clearly want to identify public disclosures on the website as we move forward, and I'm going to describe that more of what we do with the website. And then also under ORS 366-774, requiring local governments to file an annual report relating to expenditures. I'm going to ask Susan Morgan to come up a little bit more toward the end of the presentation and share from the county's perspective as well as cities with Craig where they're at as they've been moving forward with this too. The ODOT director, where I mentioned that ODOT management structure essentially falls into the idea of the project managers. One of the things that we heard concerns with the contractors were project managers. There wasn't a real consistency from what we heard from region to region. And there's been that discussion about, well, should we just have a super team of project managers? I don't know if you want to chime in on that or...
You're doing fine.
Okay. Hey, where's the smiley face in fact? Management contracts, IT governance. I'm going to explain that a little bit more to you on the governance on that and the structure on that and who would be responsible for the direction over overseeing that. Number nine, the organizational chart for divisions and projects over a certain size. I think that should be left up to the authority and discretion of the ODOT director. But as we move to the next one now, because this is our number two recommendation, this is the OTC governance and authority. And we'll be getting into this a little bit more for you. Because now all of a sudden, if you take in consideration of where, at least I see this, if we were to move forward with the joint committee giving the authority for both budget and policy, that would be one tool that we could move forward with. So just kind of keep that in mind as we move forward with this. Now all of a sudden we start creating even more so more tools. With OTC, we give them an independent budget and staff. We also take the internal auditor from ODOT and shift that over to the OTC, the commission themselves. DAS provides the human resources to that. The Efficiency Accountability Committee, which I'll call the EAC, is a piece that I originally referred to from the McKinsey report. And this is the structure of it. I really appreciate Matt Garrett because we were having the director last Friday, about this whole issue as I was sharing, giving him a little heads up on where we were going. But right now what I have, you see on the board there on the screen, you have a member from OTC. Then you have the ODOT director or designee right now toward this. You have seven division directors is what they have. And then you have two citizen appointees. Those would be appointed by the commission. So during our discussion with the director, he actually suggested a little different path because this gives him a real voice at the table. And I think that this is a good path for us. What his suggestion was is to stay true to the first two, the member from OTC, the director or designee. But then he also identified that he felt that it was more important to have the division director of the highway portfolio, which is two-thirds of their agency, the DMV director, division director, the safety division director, central services. And then he recommended also to add a couple more citizen appointees, four. I honestly do like that idea. But then again, that's one of those things that, you know, I would, you know, enjoy having input from you as we move forward with that. So the governance itself would continue seeking improvement and reports to the OTC, who reports then to the legislature, to the joint committee. So breaking it down, these are the OTC powers and duties. I'm going to go through these quickly. I think these are pretty self-explanatory. They're going to formulate general policy, develop studies, prescribe administrative practices, require the director to furnish information. This was an issue that was also identified in the McKinsey report, that there was a little concern there from the members for that issue. Promulgate and adopt all ODOT budgets and enter into agreements with other states. Okay, so now we're there. And this continues on to the next one. Enter into agreements with local governments for efficiency. And again, this is going to be part of what the EAC will be doing. And then also direct a 20-year plan for each mode and multimodal plans for the movement of people and freight. And plans to identify recommended projects and plans constrained by reasonable expectation resources. In the Constitution, or I mean actually in the Colorado policy and their statute, they have a declaration by us, the legislature, their legislature, to their commission and also to ODOT as to what is expected of them. And this is the Colorado model, as I explained. I like this idea as we move forward. But the idea behind it is obviously the first one, obtain greatest benefit from expenditures. This is essentially a cost-benefit analysis. The second one, provide statewide strategic planning for transportation. This is our number one priority. Without transportation, you have no economy. And then you have promote coordination between transportation modes. The idea behind that is we look at the whole system. We need to move both people and freight in the most efficient and effective manner that requires coordination, and that requires coordination across modes. Integrate functions to reduce costs. So cities, counties, and ODOT are all providing services for transportation. For example, if one city has the equipment to pave roads, another one does not, why not remove the redundancy through that and communicate, reducing costs, and work together? That's an area that we most definitely. This one here, I think, Senator Boquist, is where I was wanting to go with your discussion that we had earlier today, but it enhanced prospects to obtain federal funds. We need to be prepared. That's the bottom line on responding if we have projects in place, especially with federal requests for proposals, and the example being an opportunity here recently that Senator Boquist was involved in under the FAST Act. Honestly, we may have very easily dropped the ball there if it hadn't been for his involvement with this. So that's another area that we clearly want to declare on our behalf. And then ensure resiliency from natural disasters to the extent practicable. And what we're driving at with that whole issue is we want to ensure that the infrastructure can withstand a disaster and that it can be restored to resume essential transportation services. The bottom line, we need to be prepared considering transportation is the lifeline. Resiliency would withstand the disaster and aid in the recovery. Another portion that we want to talk about a little bit with you is set goals for the main objectives for the package. We've heard this from all the presenters, from all of you. A lot of us right here, and essentially, if I really drive this down, what I believe this all boils down to is, do we have outcome measurements as we move forward with all of these things? Now, for example, if I'm going to expand, let's do congestion. If I'm going to expand I-205 to help Senator Taylor to get home safely, which would be the first one, I need to have a couple things in place. One is, do I know where I'm going? Do I know how I'm going to get it done? How much it's going to cost? And can I get it done in a manner in which, in fact, does provide safety to the motoring public? And that also it would deal with the congestion and make the traffic move and flow much better. That is my outcome measurement in accomplishing what we want to do. And I think all of these things right here apply toward that. Now,
I have nothing to add. You're doing a great job.
Do you want to do the next one?
No.
Okay. Hey, thanks for being up here. Another area that we were interested in and took a look at dealt with the selection of projects and also planning for projects. As I had mentioned to you before, of the structure of what the Economic Analysis Committee was all about, that would be designed to have this on the table. So it would be that 10 members that would get a chance to look at what the criteria is, the management of RFPs, transparency issue, public process, the timelines on different projects in that process. They would also be given the second part of that to the planning for projects and then report back to and work with the commission itself. They then, again, as we described earlier, will come back to us as the joint committee and move forward with policy and then also budget to ensure that we're on track. Implementation and execution of projects, the management of RFPs. Got to understand the state doesn't build them, the roads. They are involved with them, but they hire contractors to build those roads. This is another one of those areas that you would want to have, I think, in the development of those RFPs to ensure that they're accurate and followed through would be the EAC as well as the commission. Your project manager, this was, again, this gets back to the idea of what we're wanting to do on ensuring there's consistency as well as what's happening from region to region so the contractors are not baffled on what they can do, like maybe, you know, Representative Smith in your House district. Compared to that, what's happening in the metropolitan area. clearly budget for each project. Management of change orders would be involved. And I'm trying to remember a little bit of the next one, number five. I'm wondering if we could, anybody could help me out on that one.
Sure. Chair, who's chairing
Please.
Tonight? Yes, Chair Byer. I think we were talking about the approval process for overages of any type because there's different thresholds. You know, if there's an overage, if it's $100,000 versus $1 million, and who's going to approve the overages wanting to have a system in place that's consistent for
so
the
is
projects.
That change orders?
Change orders.
Yeah. Change orders, where there's change orders, and then there's oops, we went over, and now we want to come back and retroactively. Sometimes the price for commodities can change, things like that, so we want to just make certain that we have a system in place to deal with those. It is part of change orders, yes.
Senator Girard?
Yeah, I want to back up to number two, and Andy hit on that a little bit, but the contractors really made a really big deal about mm-hmm. who the project managers were, and they would change their bids depending on who the project managers were. So that was kind of something that was enlightening to some of us, that the bids were actually being altered depending on who the project manager was.
Was there a because that went on with that?
Yes, there was a because some of the project teams were more nimble, had a get-to-yes attitude, some of them a little more trepidatious, some of them a little less experienced. That gave rise to the question about whether or not there should be super project management teams that would move between regions rather than having a project management team in Region 5 and Region 2 and on and on and on. This other piece about the overages is I think the overriding theme, at least my perspective from sitting in on the meetings, was no more surprises and not waiting until there's a problem and then coming and saying we need $40 million more from the ending balance or from wherever to try to make this up, to have an environment of no surprises. If Pioneer Mountain Eddyville is getting into trouble, let's hear about it sooner rather than later. If there are change orders, some consistency in providing those change orders, some acknowledgement, as Senator Taylor says, of price fluctuations in commodities. But it's more a reporting order that avoids surprises and does it with a more global view than rather sequentially coming in and fixing individual problems, but to see the whole layout of where are we going to have issues. Suddenly the price of gas goes up through the ceiling, or there are impediments to delivery of concrete within certain periods of time. Those sorts of surprises, to have a reporting function that is nimble enough to not wait until convocations of the legislature or in between OTC meetings.
So was that, just to clarify, was that an internal management within, you know, up to the director's office, or is that was project up to the OTC? Are you talking about all the way up to the legislature in some form?
A little of all. Mm-hmm. The use of this Efficiency and Accountability Committee internally, and I think we never got to a point where we could actually pin down who all ought to be sitting there. I didn't have the benefit of talking to the director to know his thoughts. But some kind of a committee formed specifically to look more globally at how's project delivery going. And so I definitely, in this is the gospel according to Betsy, think that there ought to be tighter review of projects internally to ODOT, a report out to the legislature so we're not surprised when there's a giant issue, when there is right-of-way acquisition, when there is a project that is falling behind, when there are giant change orders, when there are lawsuits. A way to manage that, and in my view at least of this conversation about the Efficiency Committee, was that this would be a pretty nimble in ODOT actor with full participation of the director or the director's designee. Hmm. So it's a hybrid of what you just talked about.
Part of that suggests to me your recommendation for more of a continuous joint committee of the legislature to follow those things makes sense.
Yes.
I just want to restate to you, I do not want to be on that committee. I totally got to be opposed.
I don't get to make those decisions.
Senator.
I'm sorry. Representative, looking the wrong way.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm trying to absorb this conversation because professionally I work in economic development and I work with our regional managers and our district folks. In Eastern Oregon, there's a high level of collaboration and there's a high level of communication between the department and the cities and the counties and the ports. And I struggle a little bit because I wonder if in your review, did you have a chance to talk with the public works managers of the counties or the city managers in the cities to get their interpretation?
No, so Mr. Co-Chair, and, or Mr. Chair, there we go, I get rid of that co-chair. Okay, Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, no. We did not reach out to that direction.
So, and again, this is just one of 15 thoughts here. I acknowledge that, and I'm sure many of you are much more experienced in working at that local level. But I have to give accolades to ODOT and to Matt Garrett for how he handles projects at the local level. He's dealing with many, many complex issues that all come together to make a project work. And for us as a legislature to say, hey, why aren't you keeping us in the loop? I think that's asking an awful lot of them to keep us in the loop on all of their projects on a regular basis, knowing that it's always in fluctuation. They've got area commissions on transportation. They've got their own commission. They're dealing with the public. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be a level of communication, but I got to tell you, as a person that works with them on a regular basis, I give them a high grade.
May I respond? I think that one could deduce from this that there's a fair amount of micromanagement, and I don't believe that any of us want to get into that level of micromanagement. To be honest with you, the little accountability committee came together with varying levels of understanding about what's happening with ODOT. Mm-hmm. We got an awful lot of input from an awful lot of folks, and you're going to hear from cities and counties that they have certain opinions about how this ought to work. And this display appears to add a level of complexity. I don't want to know that they're pouring sidewalk in Linton. I don't care. I'm assuming that they're doing it right. And when they're not, I'm going to hear from one of my constituents, and then I call them. And I would agree. I mean, you can't all of us call Matt. It's like calling the president of United Airlines to complain you got a center seat. He's not going to know that the sidewalk four went bad.
You and I are on the same page.
Yeah, no, we're totally on the same page. I don't want that kind of, at least, again, gospel according to Betsy, I don't want 52 reports to tell me they changed out a crosswalk. What I also don't want is to be surprised when Pioneer Mountain Eddyville goes very seriously sideways and the OTC is fixing it in increments of here's $40 million, here's $40 million more, we've done 60 jillion change orders, and oh, by the way, here's the notice of the lawsuit with the vendor. It's the big projects. And if this implies that we're going to be looking over Matt's shoulder every 5 minutes to see what's going on, then we have explained it poorly, or we as a committee didn't do our job.
Perfect. Mr. Co-Chair, we're on the same page.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I just want to echo that because that was what it sounded like to me as well, and that is I share the concern about not wanting to micromanage it and at the legislative level and to give that. And I also just want to push back a little bit on Senator Girard's comment about, I would argue that any business in which there are a series of contractors submitting bids to a company, indeed, I bet you bid differently based on who you think is going to have the project. I mean, I consider that a fairly, that sounds like a fairly common business practice to me. I do totally get the idea of super project managers. That does make a lot of sense for me to account for that.
Let me
But I just
you.
Don't think that's as pejorative as...
Let me help you. You just remember when we were all out in President Courtney's district looking at the Kaiser Bridge and hearing about how an experienced management team came in, worked with the city, worked with the legislature, and was able to suggest to ODOT different delivery methodologies that sped that project up by a year and saved a bunch of money. Leave aside the question of the city coming in later and saying we want it purple one night and pink another night and added $50,000 rather capriciously to the cost of the project. That's another story for another time, and I think comes under the general rubric of cost accountability that is embedded in our recommendations to you. But we want to look for those kinds of opportunities with very nimble management teams. And that may be something that the director or seasoned people in the department say that's not the greatest idea on the planet. I don't know. It's my experience, as Representative Smith has articulated, that you get great project teams that are very much in the loop. There are other times when the contractor promises that they're going to pour sidewalk in front of a bunch of businesses, and it doesn't get poured, and it doesn't get poured, and it doesn't get poured, and it falls to the legislators to call and whine about it. There's a mixture of delivery capabilities. Let me just put it that way, Representative Smith.
Thank you.
Moving on.
Revenue and budget. This is, I think, an area that, Senator Taylor, if you want to jump in on this at all, but I do think that this is a problem, is what we need to know, and this is, again, where I think we're potentially the Washington model would be very beneficial for us on the projections. So let's say, for example, we are able to move forward with just, for example, a $10 billion package over the next 10 years. But let's say, for example, something happens as you move forward halfway through that first 5 years time period and everything just goes south. I mean, who's going to really be paying attention to what's happening with the revenue stream that comes in for the estimates? And this is where I'm saying that if you have some fluidness with this joint committee with the OTC in connection with ODOT, you can deal with that a lot better for then having to adjust on what projects are.
Right? Yeah, so when we were talking, we didn't have anybody from ODOT, from their budget office, with us. And so this is, and I was entered a few minutes late, so perhaps you already said this at the beginning, Representative Olson, about how this is a first draft and we wanted to get some more information and some feedback from ODOT about their budget process and when they build the estimates for their budgets. The revenue estimates, as we saw the other night, I mean, we're talking about many years out, and those revenue sources, there could be some fluctuation in them, and therefore that would impact cash flow and et cetera, and if we're depending on money coming in to pay for certain things, obviously we'll want to be mindful of that. I'm sure ODOT already knows that, and they already have some systems in place. We just want to factor that into the accountability piece. The budget estimate, of course, we want to have a budget estimate for each phase of the project so that we can understand, okay, is when we, you know, someone's saying a project costs $2 billion, well, having that broken down, which I'm sure they will be able to do, is helpful because if we want to make some decisions about to maybe some things could be carved out of that so that maybe it to reduce costs. They're requiring to build in contingency funds. I would be interested to hear ODOT's feedback on that and how they do that. I don't think it's uncommon for large capital projects to have some contingency money available if things were to go south, so that not necessarily showing coming to the state and say we need to be bailed out. I'm not sure how that works. Obviously, there's bonding involved with the projects, with the bonds, and how that plays out. I'd like to hear from ODOT on that. I think we would be also interested in knowing on how the revenue is going out to the counties and the cities, because right now we're saying 50% will go to the state, 30% will go to counties, 20% will go to cities. Well, it'd be seeing how much actual money reporting back to the legislature, either when the emergency board meets or if we're going to have the joint committee through the accountability committee. That's yet to be determined. But keeping us in the loop of how much money is actually flowing to the counties and the cities so that we have a sense of that, because they're going to be making some decisions on what projects they're doing. I think that we'll want to know that, and I would argue that constituents would expect us to know that, since we're collecting the revenue and then turning around giving it to the counties and cities, having an understanding of how much money is actually really flowing out and going to, you know, Coos County and et cetera. Not to just be looking at you, Representative McKeown, but the and then requiring, I guess it's going back to requiring the counties and the cities to report back to the ODOT and OTC on what they're doing with the money and having a sense of that. It doesn't necessarily have to be every 3 months, and I completely agree with Representative Smith about not wanting this to be an exercise of micromanagement, but since we're the ones setting this up, and we're the one that's going to be imposing the tax and et cetera, constituents will want to know, okay, all this money's flowing out to cities and counties, and what are they going to be doing with the projects? And I think that's, we should be able to answer that, not just for our constituents, but in a collective whole way. So that's what I think.
I might just add to that that one of the things that has come out of this group discussion is the absence of common reporting forms. Victor had prepared a form that had left a lot of blanks in it for cities and counties. Everybody reports in a different way. And having standardized reporting mechanisms going forward so you could actually compare apples to apples, you could have increments over time. You don't send people back spelunking through records that are dated and old, but if we end up with a package, having this common vocabulary of reporting.
And I just want to echo that, because that was one of the problems in our work group is, you know, not everybody speaks the same language.
That's right.
I mean, my version of FAIR, you know, mucking through the jungle with a rucksack is much different than the director's version of GOOD sitting at the restaurant across town. And so we have this whole issue of, you know, I have this suit thing going on between us. This whole issue of, you know, what do these standards mean, and there was no standardized reporting we found in our work group, so being able to have that in the future, even on an annual basis, of, you know, how many road miles, what's good, what's bad, what's fair, whatever you want to make up, but just standardized, mm-hmm. so we could all look at apples and oranges and compare them and figure out what the next decision is.
If I could add to that, I completely agree with you, Senator Boquist, and then on top of it, we have this, I mean, obviously the roads are not necessarily going to stay nice and neat and tidy within, the work is not going to always stay within county lines and a city line, and we'll be crossing over them. And I just really encourage that we be mindful about, you know, here we are, you know, representing our constituents, and folks are going to want to know why something's happening in Melyer County, and then what's happening when it flows over to the next county over, and making, you know, the decision process and the accounting for the money, and just having the standardization, especially since the work will not stay necessarily neat and tidy within specific counties and cities, will be important, I think. So,
because the next county over is called Idaho.
Moving on.
Both Craig and Susan will be coming up a little, after we're done here, and share a little bit more. That kind of ties in the idea of the fifth bullet point there on requiring counties. I like where they're going with that. There's some discussion as to whether or not that should be moved toward the EAC to develop that, I think, or more inclined to move forward with it and put it in statute. So, but they'll share that. So accountability piece of it that gets a little bit more. Actually create a hotline with a whistleblower protections. And we have the potential. I haven't had the ability, or I mean taken the time out to talk to the Secretary of State, but they do have a 24/7, you know, hotline. And I honestly don't know why we wouldn't be able to tie into that somehow toward that. But that would be one piece toward the accountability across the state with Oregonians. The next one, the clawback, placing a clawback provision into contracts. We didn't have any conversation with that specifically with the contractors. But honestly, I think to some degree that makes real sense.
Talk about that a little bit. what do you mean by that?
You want to show the story at the table? Or
so this is Chair Beyer. This is Senator Beyer. Excuse me. This is potentially a sensitive subject, I admit, and I will show my personal bias that I am a fan of clawback provisions in contracting. I think it's completely reasonable to say that if we are expending public resources to buy something and the terms of the contract are not met, that perhaps we should be able to have recourse on that. Now, there's a lot of legal issues around that, and it makes a lot of people very, very nervous to talk about clawback provisions in government contracting. So this is just an entry point to take the temperature and just to throw it out there in the public light, whether or not we want to consider that.
So in this context, do you have an example?
So we say to, you're in Multnomah County, and I'll just take my own county, and we hire X company to work on said road, and we say we need to have this done for this amount of money per mile or whatever the metric is that's been agreed upon, what the price of the materials is going to be, the timelines that are going to be met, and et cetera. And all of a sudden, for reasons... Now, if it's something that they can't control, then that's one thing, but they don't meet the timeline, the costs are higher than what is expected, et cetera, then perhaps having the possibility to say you're in violation of the contract and therefore we would want to have, sometimes it's 3%, times 5%, sometimes it's the cost of the materials. I mean, clawback provisions can look differently, and then they are used, of course, we all know this, in the private sector. It's, again, it's a very contentious issue. I'm just showing my personal bias that I think it's. I think citizens want to make certain that their money is being well looked after.
And I think we recognize that ODOT does, in some cases, use contracts with liquidated damages in it, but some standardization and some understanding from DOJ that we're not writing one-off contracts for every one of these jobs. We've got to have certain provisions that protect the state within each contract. And so if there's a failure to perform for some reason, the assumption isn't the contractor sues the state and wins.
Something to be explored further. Potentially a contentious issue, but I just wanted to throw it out.
Good idea.
Not easy.
Been done in some.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, continuing with the ODOT OTC internal auditor role, responsibilities. I mean, actually what we're wanting to try to do here is create a watchdog type environment here. Not to the point where it's like an internal affairs that I'm going to take your badge and gun and put you on a suspension, you know, until the investigation's done. But one of those things that are we staying on track? Then the next piece, random audits of selection tied in with Secretary of State. Again, this is going to be one of those things that you know, approaching the audits division with Secretary of State, you know, obviously it's if they're willing to put, you know, or address issues given what their schedule is. But it would, one of the things that we most definitely would be interested in is based on project size and cost. So the audit compliance of expenditures, for example. And if you remember, the three pieces that were left out in the scope of the Craig's proposal initially and what we ended up eventually receiving out of the McKinsey report dealt with budget and funding management, contracting practices and contract selection, compliance with statutes and policy mandates. I think of those three, most definitely I believe it would be of our interest to ask the Secretary of State if they would be willing to audit the compliance of expenditures. Metrics for average price per, I mean, that's right pricing. Is what we're getting the right price? This is the best bang for the buck for what we're getting, again. And website and map. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. That kind of plugs into, again, another accountability piece, but also provides some insurance to the public as well in regards to that. For the accountability part continued, it's extremely important here that we feel that there's got to be reporting back to the OTC and the legislature on timelines and budgets of what's happening. ODOT report back to the legislature on excessive regulations reporting requirements.
Let me jump in here on this one. I've been the one that has raised the question of regulatory overlap or regulatory contradiction, and one that quickly comes to my mind is the notion of replacing culverts. And or also water flow under a state highway where DSL may have some degree of authority. Some of these, as you see this presented, remember we only met five times. And as I started to say and then diverted slightly, we came with all different levels of understanding of ODOT processes and procedures. And in some cases, ODOT is doing this. And we don't mean this presentation to suggest they're not. But some of this stuff, like on the regulations, some mechanism to give ODOT the teeth to actually go and negotiate with sister agencies. I understand from conversations with Director Garrett that they've been quite successful in negotiating in some instances with ODFW, that instead of replacing an entire culvert, they're just replacing the bottom piece of it. But we need in some way to harmonize the multiplicity of regulations, particularly with culverts where there's fish passage, so that you don't get an already designed, out-to-bid ODOT project and ODFW comes in and announces the flow of water through the culvert. This is all hypothetical, but the flow of water through the culvert isn't adequate to support this population of pick a critter. And so what you end up with here is kind of a little checklist or a menu of things. Things that you could select from. Again, this is more scattershot than it is a finalized menu of proposals for you all. That's, I think, so we tough. Wanted to make sure that you knew we were thinking about a variety of different things, but don't come with the you know, thou shalt's all engraved and ready to go. Many of these, my point is, many of these need a lot more discussion and negotiation and the opportunity to find what exactly is the status of where ODOT is. At this moment, for all I know, they've worked out a memorandum of understanding with ODFW that has some degree of consistency. If not, then my... Good. Failing that, we're spending a lot of time doing one-off negotiations on some of this regulatory overlap.
Cool. Representative.
Thank you. Thank you for all this work. Are you suggesting, Senator, that this team up here do that work, or the OTC does the work, or who does the work?
I'm suggesting that this is a work in progress and needs some refinement and some winnowing down and some tightening. We gave you the distillation of multiple streams of input. The timeline had us reporting out tonight. I don't know what the will of the four chairs and co-chairs are to give us any more time to distill this down into a series of more refined principles that could be included in a larger document. Mm-hmm. I simply don't know how the four of you have structured any refinement to the presentations. I think it was important that the accountability committee report out and tell you this is what our thinking has been. These are the sorts of things we've discussed. This was the source of our input. I would certainly not suggest that all 14 of us sit down with this and negotiate each one. We'll be here until 10 years from now. I would look for guidance from the four of you to say, what's your timeline for allowing us the opportunity to get this winnowed down a little bit?
So let me just chip in on that, Senator. So Representative Boquist, I'm of the opinion, we've had some discussion of this, that from this point forward, we go down to the Legislative Council and we start crafting a draft bill. And that's from that point then, we move forward with, we amend it, we beat it up, do whatever it takes, but we have a starting point of where we want to go, and we do it quickly.
But it may not have every single element in
this.
Exactly. It'd be a bill that looks like the Manhattan phone directory. I think we have to, if you entrust us with this responsibility, give some guidance to Ledge Council about prioritizing the recommendations and getting those that are achievable without a lot of additional research or resources into a more manageable format.
I sort of wonder on that. I mean, it's really good that you've highlighted that. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that's something that we can accomplish within this session, or if it's something that we might want to direct the OTC to take a look at and make recommendations back for 2018 to change the law where necessary. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, I would agree with you completely, because some of this, frankly, is within the purview of the OTC. It shouldn't be micromanaged by us.
Right.
So this would be an iterative process over some period of time. I think we could distill out of this the things that we think are important, for example, the appointment process for the director. But much of this would be a further assignment to the OTC to work on it in a spirit of continuous improvement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciate that, too, that comment. And again, I mean, I don't want to disvalue, but I think there's a great thought on what Colorado's model has been and what McKinsey's report identified with this EAC. Because you have the director there with some of his staff. I mean, they get it. I mean, that's valuable information. And to plug in with the commission itself, getting back, I think it works extremely well.
Chair Beyer. These, from my perspective, I think what would be helpful is to have, building on what you said, is to have ODOT come forward and just tell us basically, based on everything that we brought up tonight, how do they plan on being, what is their vision of how they're going to be able to answer questions from the public, and what is their plan for being held, you know, accountability going forward? And because this is obviously awesome sums of money that we're discussing here. And so I personally would like to hear them, you know, have one of our meetings, half of a meeting or something like that, just come forward and present to us how they plan on being held accountable. And then based on some of the things that we've discussed tonight, then we can say, hey, we would like to see that there is a way for, how is a whistleblower going to call something to someone's attention? Maybe they already have a program for that. We don't know. But this way we would have them come forward, say what their plan is, their accountability plan is, and then we could chime in and say we'd like to see these changes. That's just a possibility for consideration. So.
Representatives, Mr. Co-Chair, what you co-chairs are leading is probably one of the largest single investments in Oregon's history, what we're trying to put together here. Matt, does ODOT have a newsletter?
We do.
I wonder if it'd be possible as part of this accountability piece for the department to make sure all 90 members of the legislature get a regular copy of a newsletter that keeps track of this work that's going on, so that way we can be sending it out to our constituents about the good work within ODOT, where we are, progress, et cetera. It's a great way to feed the public information.
Sure. That's a good idea. Thank you, Chair Beyer. It would seem to me that we have two tracks going here, that we could proceed down one track with changes in that are more immediate, which would be governance structure, the things that seem very apparent. But the things that are going to take more effort, more time, more collaboration with what ODOT is already doing, when we can, with you as a mm-hmm. committee or a work group, figure out where those overlaps are, the things that are being done and not being done. So maybe we need two tracks here. Maybe we need things that are immediate that we could build into a bill for this session, and then an accountability work group that can move forward and deal with the other things that are going to take some time.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thanks for pointing that out. I should have probably, you know, shared this with you at the very beginning. The brown-colored pages, pictures are really our top recommendations. These are filler recommendations on the blue pages. So that might help you to understand a little bit more, and it does narrow it down quite a bit more.
Mm. Thank you.
Okay. Then the last point, the clarification of contract law, accountability, and transparency. You know what we're after here, and I know that today. I don't know how it turned out, but there are two bills right now: House Bill 3203 and Senate Bill 1045. Mm-hmm. 3203 basically works toward an ongoing discussion in construction industry with the counties and the cities and the state. So I'm curious how that's going to play out in that. Then this is number four of the Brown ones, and this was one that actually we feel is fairly important. Includes all STIP projects, and also what it does is dashboard includes creating a dashboard or a website. Estimated cost, estimated completion date of a project, total cost, current spending, and over under budget and over under completion date. So if I am someone that just an ordinary citizen, I want to know whether or not there's going to be the six lanes added from the Eugene area north to I'm putting a plug in for us.
We picked up on that.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Anyways, if six lanes were to be created from Eugene to Salem at Kubler exit, how long would that take? And I want to know if it's done in phases, what's the projected times, and as I'd be able to go on to a simple little dashboard, it'd be user-friendly for Representative Lively, and he would be able to walk through it real easy and find out these different items. And the development of that dashboard, of the opinion that that should probably be created by the EAC. Now, as I mentioned that with the EAC, there's a couple other things, too, that we need to throw in there, too, for their responsibilities, too, that we would want them to be assigned and work on. And we heard this from the former chairs, as well as from the reports that have been given to us. It deals with KPMs, the key performance measurements. There's just a ton full of them out there. But how meaningful are they? And what we would be interested in working through the EAC is to develop some meaningful KPMs for the agency, as well as for OTC, that would have outcome measurements attached to them. Also, another area that we would be wanting them to work at is lessons learned.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're looking at that maybe on a project completion. I'm assuming you're talking about bigger projects, sort of what were the sort of an afterward report back and say, okay, what did we learn from this project? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Positives and negatives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On the bridge in Kaiser, we learned blah, 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 and it all turned out good. We saved money and time and citizen hassle. And I hate to keep going back.
I think you're talking about Woodburn, Senator.
What did I call it?
Kaiser.
Kaiser. I'm not from these parts. Woodburn. Thank you.
The city out there.
Out there.
The one you drive
bridge,
under every day.
The purple bridge. the successes and the failures.
Cool. Very good.
And then the next one is STIP project selection criteria. All
I'm
these
sorry.
Points here.
Hold on there. Representative Bent.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you go back to that previous slide just for a second?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Challenge your abilities there.
Here we go. Let's see, where are we? Last. Previous. There we go. Okay.
So one of the things that we've asked for on the JTA projects was the value created. What we got out of it, why we spent the money, the return on the investment, why are we doing this? In other words, what I see up there is calling out of the cost, and that's all very nice, but it doesn't call out the ultimate benefit. And it seems to me that at the very start, we would be saying something that the public looks at and says, oh, yes, here's why they're doing it. As a, this assumes we take that for granted. That's very unfortunate. And someone should spend some time figuring out what should be on that dashboard that calls out the benefit of that expenditure really clearly, because there's so many different, there's a lot of facets to it. It ought to be there.
And I think, if you don't mind me amplifying on what you've said, project specific, because if we simply say reduce congestion, if we do the I-5, and it pushes all the congestion onto 217, there needs to be some explanation for this specific project benefit, because it might be a detriment to somebody else during that construction period. Tonight on the news, everybody's complaining about the bridge in Portland. Everybody wants the fixes, but the bridge is closed, and people are screaming bloody murder. Today, I think, was the first day that the Hawthorne Bridge was lane-restricted.
Morrison.
Was lane-restricted. And it's describing the benefit there. That one's a little trickier, because what I've learned on the news is that it was a contractor screw-up that resulted in having to redo some of the plates on the surface of the bridge. Yeah. But lessons learned.
Bad contract.
Yeah, or you don't use some experimental fabric or material. I don't know what the reasons are. I'm just guessing. Volcus.
When we were, one of the briefings we got, I think it was from Washington in our committee, and they have project information website, but they had status projects. Are you talking about upon project completion, or are you talking about both, like what WSDOT had, which gives you, you know, here's the project, for, we'll just pick it, you know, Abernathy Bridge, you know, here's what it is, and you have a status report, and they update it, you know, quarterly or whatever as they go along, so the public can see the updates as they go along. And that's how WSDOT...
Exactly, yeah, that's exactly.
Okay, so it's not at the completion. It's basically once you have the project, it comes up, and then the public can see how it's progressing, so on and so forth.
That's and exactly actually, right. Based on the conversation that some of us had with the Washington Department of Transportation this morning when they were talking about tolling and introducing that in the state of Washington, they made a special point of saying that that messaging was absolutely integral for people to understand a very significant change in how roads were being used. And had that not occurred, they don't know if they would have had the success that they had. They had a very sizable budget for doing it as well.
Representative Benz?
Yeah, you are absolutely 1,000% positive on that training up of or educating, however you're going to say it. But my point here was a statement. We might want to think about a statement of the problem and then a statement of the solution, which is, this is supposed to be reflective of. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this the problem we're spending $400 million on is, and then there should be a link back to the long-term plan to show why it all fits.
We also shouldn't kid ourselves, and again, I'm drawing on the conversation that we had this morning with Washington. Much of these accountability measures, no matter what you select from our little menu of offerings, are going to require ODOT to have some capabilities that they maybe need to build up now or create. The Washington folks created their tolling back room. They kept referring to it from whole cloth. They had not the expertise to begin with all internal people. And on these websites, we all know that you've plugged into a website someplace and it's information from 2013. That has exactly the opposite effect. Instead of people feeling as though you're communicating, they're just furious that it's out of date. And so this is going to have to be maintained and have different computer capabilities and have people that are monitoring the changes and have an internal level of communication that heretofore maybe has been a little less formalized and a little less routinized. So this is going to cost money, but I absolutely agree with Representative Benz. If people are going to see the value of spending the kind of money that we're spending, it better tell them why, it better quantify the opportunity, it better explain the alternatives, and make it so it's user-friendly and navigable.
Can I add? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to add to that, Senator Johnson. I want to be able to brag about the work the legislature's done, not defend it. And I think if we handle this correctly, and I probably throw too many roses Matt's way, but if Matt does this correctly, the way I believe he's going to, we're going to be able to brag about this. And it's going to lead to us to be able to do future projects and work together in this collaborative way. So I strongly support what you're saying here. I hope we put a tone to it to where it says, look at what your money's buying us.
The anticipatory piece of this, if I can give you one other example, there's a huge project right now that's happening in Tillamook at the intersection of 101 and 6. Highly disruptive to downtown. And it's lane restricted now. Now we're just coming out of winter, but the merchants who are still struggling are realizing summer and the tourist season is just around the corner. And they look out of their shops and they go, God, we're down to one lane. What happens when visitors come here and they have a hideous visitor experience? They'll never be back. My shop is doomed. And so I think if we begin this management flow, you could have meetings with local affected merchants, with some team of folks to say, we'll get it open and be back up to four lanes by the time the June Dairy Parade happens. We'll be able to accommodate the rush of visitors. A lot of it is about communication, but again, that translates into more bodies, more IT capacity, and the kind of folks that are more communicators than engineers and builders in Matt's shop.
And just to point out what we were listening to WSDOT this morning, along with what Representative Smith was saying, but we're almost even in the Stone Age because we're talking about putting up a web page, and they have social media apps and everything else that are flowing along there. The Wayland's the world. I don't see Wayland here tonight, but that's sort of IT thing, so that we're ahead of this, and they even have people in WSDOT The plan we're trying to develop 20 years out in front of us, so Matt and others have it out there. We're, as Senator Representative Smith says, we're out ahead of it. You know, we have the social media people know that the problem's coming faster, and that's what they have at WSDOT now, and we're able to identify that and react to it faster, and so we have the answer before the even formal question is asked.
Yeah. So we need to hire a bunch of 19-year-olds?
That's right.
This is job security for Wayland for the rest of his life. But the comment from Washington this morning was how much information, both good and bad, social media carries as opposed to the traditional forms of communication.
Moving on.
Okay, so
still working.
Representative Benz's, on the STIP project selection criteria, these are all things right here, these points right here, you know, obviously the criteria right there as you move forward with any decision. These are things I think that the public would be interested in wanting to know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does I-205 from Abernathy North, if we're going to put an HOV lane in there or fourth lane, whatever, is it going to improve the state highway system? Does it enhance the safety? Does it make and support the economy? Is it going to make the flow better? Am I going to? Those are all kind of things, and these are. It even gets into the environmental stewardship part of it and then, you know, Representative Benson, you go to consistent with greenhouse gas goals, but also the resiliency that I mentioned earlier about natural disasters. These are all measurements that we feel that apply, and I think the public would be interested in wanting to know as well as you move forward with.
But also, this is a place where we can get stuck and there's no mud.
That's right.
The right-thinking people can differ on what defines livable communities. Mm-hmm. And if, in fact, we're looking at a large construction agenda, figuring out a pathway to not use this as rigid selection criteria, but rather open up a two-way conversation so that we can move forward. We have had in my district a debate about what commodities should travel on our public infrastructure. And if we get ourselves hamstrung fighting about what kind of commodity can move across a dock, we're going to be paralyzed. And so some of these suggestions have, as you wisely pointed out, Chair McKeown, some of these are long-term work that I think is best left to others in a more deliberative process than us racing towards the end of a July or beginning of July trying to get a package put together. So we ought to take the low-hanging fruit off of this with assignments out to others to work on some of it as continuous improvement.
Moving on.
Okay. So with that, this is the famous comment in the speech that Governor McCall once said, I urge them to come and come many, many times to enjoy the beauty of Oregon. But I also ask them, for heaven's sake, don't move here to live.
Oh, I'm sure, gosh. You had to bring that up.
Yeah, but you know, if you look closely at the sign, it's got a bunch of bullet holes. Yeah. You can see it really well. I'm thinking, what is that all about? I didn't notice that.
Thank you for your patience.
Yeah, thank you very much. So,
Susan, Craig, thank you for your work. Come on.
That's good.
So we're going to hear a little bit of an update from the cities and the counties perspective on their relationship too as we move forward with this.
Welcome. You have cartoons as well?
First. Co-chairs Beyer and McCune. For the record, my name is Susan Morgan, and I'm a transportation policy manager for the Association of Oregon Counties. And I appreciate the great work that Chair Olson and the members of the Accountability Work Group have done. Let me first just start out by saying that the counties really appreciate the relationship that we have with ODOT. They work hand in glove with us on a lot of projects. They've put together, for example, a program where we can exchange federal funding for state funding because state funding is a lot less complicated, and that helps us out a lot. So it cuts across a lot of ways, but we are very strong partnerships with them, and we really appreciate the helpfulness and the cooperation that we have. In this era that we're in right now, where trust in government at whatever level is low, accountability is a really important issue, and it's a worthwhile challenge. Our citizens want to know what their transportation dollars are spent on and how that spending is impacting the condition of the infrastructure. So counties have welcomed the challenge that was given to us by your work groups, and we've been working diligently to identify ways to gather and display information. And I think, too, that I'm going to kind of depart here and say that from the discussions that I've heard and from the thought that we've put into it on the county level as we've muddled through this, I think it's really important to have a consolidated website that has state, county, and city information on it so people know where to go to get that information. And I think that it's also important that there's some level of coordination between the ways that the levels of government are reporting information. So, as I've said before, AOC is really fond of saying if you've seen one county, you've seen one county. There's a broad diversity in the ways that individual counties, and no doubt cities also, keep their accounts, pull their budget documents together, and structure their CAFRs, their comprehensive annual financial reports. There's one document that we all do. It's called the Local Streets and Roads Questionnaire, and all counties and all cities over 5,000 fill that document out every year individually. All those documents go to ODOT, and ODOT amalgamates them into one humongous spreadsheet, and they submit it to the Federal Highway Administration as part of their requirements. Other states make this information available to the public on their transportation agency websites. I think ODOT did that in the past because when you search it on their website, you come up with older versions of the report. But we should be doing that right now here also. These reports already exist, they're comprehensive, and they're easily available. And from the perspective of cost-effective and efficiency, it doesn't get much better than this. So this is something that we should get going on, I think. Being able to display the condition of the infrastructure is going to take a while. Because of jurisdictional differences in capacity, road condition information is collected and categorized in different ways. When AOC surveyed county road officials about how they assess the conditions of their roads, we found some similarities and some differences. We need to sit down and discuss what types of streets and roads should be assessed, what level they should be at, how much it'll cost to standardize the data, and how much standardization is actually needed to be able to communicate with the citizens of the state about the the changes that will occur to that system over time as investments are made and not made to it. We need time to work through this issue with our partners at ODOT and the cities and figure out how to display this information. So we'd like to give you the we'd like you to give us the charge and the opportunity to do that. Bridge condition is an easier thing to take a look at because the FWHA, the Federal Highway folks, already have ODOT assessing bridge conditions across their system, the county system, and the city system. There's been some interest in assessing the condition of culverts. I have had an interesting conversation with several of you about this. Just to let you know kind of what we're up against, AOC looked at surveys that had been done at the county level. Our road officials reported responsibility for over 200,000 culverts across the system. The issues that will need to be addressed will parallel the road discussion. How are we going to grade these? How are we going to report back on them? How are we going to try to get some similarity in the reporting across the jurisdictions? Oregon counties, thank you for the great work that you've done to address accountability. We welcome the opportunity to keep working with you and collecting and displaying this important information so that Oregon citizens can have useful information about how their transportation dollars work. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions or turn it over to my compadre from the cities.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Honeyman, League of Oregon Cities. Let me first express my gratitude to Representative Olson for allowing us to come up here and engage in this conversation with you. Clearly, accountability for the receipt and expenditure of public highway funds is a responsibility of any, should be a responsibility of any road agency. It will help if we agree to a program that has just been described to you. Will help presumably get a package out of this building. It would help, if necessary, sustain a referral to the voters of the state of Oregon if they could be made comfortable with the notion that accountability standards are in place. And perhaps more importantly than both of those, it would be the basis going forward for your understanding and the public's understanding of how well these public funds for transportation are being spent, which could hopefully underpin a future transportation package discussion. Let me point out at the outset that cities already feel that they're accountable for how they receive and expend state highway funds. They are required, as you know, to provide annual audits for all of their operations and expenditures, and they do so. And like you, they're responsible to their constituents, the voters, every day for their activities in their cities. We are happy to accept and engage in the development of additional accountability structures, however. And thanks to the good work of Ms. Morgan, we've come up with the beginnings of a process which we hope you will consider. On the quantitative side, she's already pointed out that there's an annual street and road survey that, by the way, cities, the League of Oregon Cities participates with ODOT in promoting the need or the requirement that cities, over 5,000, participate in this exercise annually. And when there are recalcitrant cities not meeting deadlines for a response, we circle back with them. ODOT tells me which cities they are, and I circle back with them to make sure that they respond. But this information will generates data, expenditure data, in many of the areas I think you would be interested in, whether it be preservation, maintenance, modernization, bike and ped facilities, administrative costs, all of the broad categories that I believe that you would be interested in. On the qualitative side, we've also talked about the need for some sort of a pavement condition survey. This would, as Ms. Morgan indicated, take some time to put together, and maybe it's not an annual exercise. Maybe every 4 years, for example, but we can talk about that. The question is, what are the criteria that are going to be used? ODOT has their own. Some cities have their own. And who does the work and who pays for the work? So I believe You know, we could contract with ODOT because they already do some of that on their own facilities. I think AOC has their own program in place, so we're going to have discussions going forward about that. A reference has been made several times to a website. All of this data, both the qualitative and the quantitative data, could be aggregated over time so that the viewer, you or the public, could see over time the trends in expenditures and what those expenditures look like literally on the ground, on the road, in terms of improvement to road conditions or the maintenance of road conditions. So my last comment would be my recommendation that this committee and the legislature articulate the objectives and the outlines, the type of products that you'd like this, these accountability standards to address, and then leave it to a work group or a regulatory process to determine the particulars, because there are a lot of variables that are going to need to go into this to make it effective and useful to the public and to you. So with that, I appreciate, again, the opportunity to discuss this, and we look forward to working with you all to develop these accountability standards. Thank you.
Thank you. Good. Senator Volkus?
Just to sort of restate what former commissioner and the good representative of the city stated, I mean, we really have most of the information. That's the challenge that we face. But what we don't have is a common, uniformed display mechanism for those accountabilities and that status. Mm-hmm. And that's the key point, especially if we're going to invest money and say, and we've gone back and forth, and Susan and I have sparred on the culvert issue, because the culvert issue is intriguing, because there was, oh, we have all these culverts we have to fix, and the question is, well, how many culverts are there? And as the good senator pointed down here, you're driving across Eastern Oregon, and supposedly all the culverts at the up to this county line are good, and you've only seen one county, Susan, and the next county, the culverts are all falling in, but they are good too. And so the goal here is, you know, the old law enforcement, military, keep it simple, stupid, but is there just one page that you eventually click on a web page that says the city of mm-hmm. Baker City, here's their list of information that they control and update, so that there's common reporting for common decision making across the board? And I do think we have most of the stuff. It's just that we need to get all of it organized together. And if that takes time, that's fine. We just have to put the suspense at one end so the public knows they're going to see it.
Senator Johnson?
Representative Nathanson came in and spoke before a committee that I sit on the other day, pitching for a bill that I think is a wonderful bill, very expensive, but absolutely necessary, and that's to align a lot of the geospatial information that we have so that you knew where geographic boundaries were, you knew by milepost where a culvert was. And I'm not criticizing ODOT's data, but that you could have these maps delivered in all sorts of different ways. And I think the public would find those enormously useful. It's going to take us a long time to build up that platform just by gathering the data. But Representative Smith was there, too, and I think it's a wonderful idea. And it could eventually help inform this kind of ongoing discussion. Because my belief is we're going to get a package out this session, but this is not the end of it. We can't walk away and say, well, that's that. We have to be in a process of continuous investment, continuous accountability, and continuous reporting back to the citizens whose money we're spending to improve a system that we already own and need to maintain and improve.
Representative Betts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me ask this question and see what kind of tremors of fear it sends through you.
Boy, there's a lead-up.
We put together a team of 20 people, and their job is to drive to each of the 241 cities and do the audit of the current condition. And we'll give them a list of stuff that they need to do. They need to look at how the money's spent, how many people are in the road department, where the contracts are being let. We'll give them a list. And they're going to show up unannounced. And they're going to come back and give us a report. 241 reports on the current state of affairs in cities or counties. Now, that's what we're really looking for, but we're looking at it in all kinds of odd after-the-fact ways. But when I go back home and I say, hey, we're going to raise your gas tax, and we're going to raise your registration fees, and we're going to give all the money to fill-in-the-blank city, and half the people there go, well, they're a bunch of fill-in-the-blank, all bad negative descriptive phrases, I'd like to have a tool that I can use to say, no, they're great. or they're really in need, and they haven't been wasting the money so far. Now, I think what you said is we're supposed to put together that list. Is that what I heard? I mean, I'm happy to do it, but I'm just wondering if we come out and say that we're going to put this SWAT team together, if you guys are going to be excited.
Chair Beyer, Representative Pence, I don't think that's exactly what I said. I think the on the quantitative side, I think my point was, and I believe Ms. Morgan will agree, is that that data is already collected. It just needs to be, as Senator Boqvist suggested, understood and packaged in a way that is useful to you and to the public. We don't need to reinvent that wheel. On the qualitative side, it's my understanding that that ODOT, they periodically, I'm not sure it's every year, but every 2 or 3 years, does their own pavement condition survey. I believe, and I defer to Ms. Morgan to describe their program, but cities don't have a unified pavement condition program, although individual cities do their own analysis. Some of them use ODOT standards, some of them don't.
Yeah.
So there is lack of uniformity there, but if we could agree on the uniformity, again, I don't think we have to reinvent the wheel if we ask from a city perspective, and this is going to cost some money, I'm going to have to figure out how to pay for it, that we have people already out in the field who are doing this work, do it for cities as well.
So follow up.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? What I'm saying is it's a self-assessment. There's the problem. And I don't want to say I don't believe the cities. I represent in my law business. Did represent a bunch of them. They're pretty focused on how they spend their money, for various reasons. But how do we solve this problem of convincing the people of Oregon that we are not just relying upon a bunch of people to pat themselves on the back and say, "Hey, we're doing great. Give us some more money."
So let me. I think that we need to remember and not lose sight of the fact that the accountability process that we're going to undertake is going to cost money, and it's going to take money away from actually fixing roads and bridges and things like that. And so I think it's incumbent on us to find the least expensive way that we can do this accountability package and rely as much as we can on data that is already entering the system and use existing systems as much as we can. And so that's why I think we need to all sit down together, because we are all collecting pavement data. We don't know how close we all are because we haven't all sat down and said, here's what my 0 to 100 means and here's what my 0 to 10 means. And we need to do that. We need to figure out whether the differences between the different programs are really worth trying to correct. From the point of view of the public, it may be good enough to just say you have really good roads, really bad roads, medium bad roads and pretty good roads. I mean, something that simple, which you could do without doing a lot different than we're doing already.
Senator Beyer and Representative Bentz, if I could. I think, Representative Bentz, what you're addressing is an issue that I don't have an answer for, and that is the level of trust or lack thereof the public in government, all levels. And I don't have an answer for that except to say that when we do this package, we do it well, we do the accountability well, and we begin to build over time that trust back into at least the discussion of transportation, if not other issues as well. But I wish I had an answer for you, but I don't.
I think also that we need to look at this as iterative over time, that what we start out with, we're going to learn from, we're going to get feedback on, and we're going to continue to refine it.
Okay. More?
Well, thank you very much. Most appreciated. We look forward to the continued partnership. Representative Olson and your team, great job.
Thank you.
That's it.
Thank you very much.
I'm not sure you needed to end with that, but other than that.
Anything else?
I have a question.
Oh, go ahead.
I sent an email out to all the members, and ODOT has offered to do a tutorial on the spreadsheet, so on and so forth, tomorrow morning from 7:30 to 8:30, and from tomorrow from 4:30 to 5:30 in S313. That's S313. And it only takes about 15 minutes. So if there's any members, before you leave, I'd like to kind of get any members that want to go and take, you know, 15 minutes to learn how to do the spreadsheet, or if you're just too busy, we sort of need to know that too, and we can make arrangements to have one of the experts come meet you personally in your office. So I don't know. It's now 7:30 at night. So is there anybody that wants to show up at 7:30 in the morning? Could I get it? Yeah, anybody voluntary? So why don't we let ODOT know not to do 7:30 tomorrow morning, and we'll keep 4:30 to 5:30 open tomorrow afternoon. But I really need any of you that want to get a five o'clock. So he needs to be there tomorrow. Is we'll set up a time. So some of you can't meet, have your staff email my office back, and we're coordinating with ODOT so we can get you a one-on-one time for someone for Waylon or one of them to come sit down with you, just you, not the rest of us, and go through the spreadsheet, show you how it works, and answer the questions that you had, Senator Taylor, and some of that stuff.
I'm sorry,
Representative Smith.
3:30.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, I just want to share a thought with you. Over the last couple months, both on the record and off the record, I've been hypercritical of the trucking industry, alluding to the fact that I didn't think that they were paying their fair share. I want to share with you, over the last couple days, I've had a chance to read the cost allocation study and to actually be educated on this. And I'm a little embarrassed that I've been here 18 years and I've never read that study. But I want you to know it was very informative, and it's very obvious to me that the trucking industry is really stepping up and being a good partner in the maintenance and preservation of our roads. And so I appreciate all they do, and I apologize if there was any public perception that I created that I don't support them. That report was fascinating. So thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
How much did that cost, Russell?
I just want to let Reverend Smith, I've had to see that study 20 times in revenue already. I've done it enough for you.
Okay. For the record, before we adjourn, Representative McLean and Senator Winters could not be here tonight, and they are excused. Anything else for the good of the order? A lot of information, good work, good information tonight, and we are adjourned. We are adjourned. And